Okay, a little bit of context for this one. My father used to live in Ossining, New York, which is where Sing Sing prison was. And he lived in an old farmhouse with his grandfather. And my father had no father, but was raised by this grandfather, who was like this wonderful, tall, bald, old pharmacist, like Irish beanpole, like really tall and very dour, but just incredibly charismatic and generous to my father. And he used to talk to my father, and he used to send him off to get his gold watch. John Allen, bring me my watch. My father's name is John Allenbarger. And he used to tell him that if he did good things, Fat Boy would come and give him rewards. And if he did bad things, the old Black Crow would come and do I don't know what. Bad things. Anyway, this is called Fat Boy. So it's from my dad's voice. Grandpa locks himself inside a nightmare. Women wail at his door. Women tiptoe in the farmhouse. There he is at the top of the stairs like Boris Karloff. Auntie says, more like Cornelius Krieghoff. Whatever he is, he scares the owls back to hell, says Grandma. How can Grandma tell? All day she lifts her skirt above her head. All day she warms her tushy by the wood stove. All day she warbles by the wood stove. At times, Grandpa cries for what belongs to no one. Today he cries for what belongs to him. John Allen, bring me my watch. I tear through shitpots so. I tear so through encyclopedias and pipes. I tear through toy trains and dirty magazines. I find the watch, his old gold onion with the steam train on back. On the radio, Count Dracula has Grandpa's eyebrows. At night, my soul floats up the wood stove. At night, my soul creaks. At night, my soul creeps on the floorboards. At dinner, I am a bellhop. My hat is sideways, and I cannot stop. I launch a lamb chop. What the deuce, says Auntie. Keep it up, says Grandpa. He bends over me like an old shotgun. Keep it up, and Fat Boy won't bring gifts. That night, I dream hell. I ask for gifts. I ask for help. Fat Boy is nailed to a totem pole. Fat Boy is nailed to our house. Fat Boy is nailed to Grandpa. Next morning, Grandpa's in a box. I tear down Auntie's curtains. I run out without my socks. I run into the forest. Wind and silence in the branches. I yell, what am I to do? I watch these yells in the branches, in the silence. They seem to float. I have a small cluster of poems here, which are after the book. So I'll read these. Do you guys know who Henry Darger is? The outsider artist? I see like three heads. Yeah? Anyway, so he's, probably most of you know this guy, but he was living in Chicago, I think, and died, I think, in the 70s. And his stuff is super famous now. There's a documentary about him. And I saw one of his paintings in MoMA. He had an entire cosmology of like these little girls, but they were peculiar. The whole thing was strange. It's very violent, and he was a very innocent guy. He was, I think he was in his 70s, but he wrote this hugely long novel called In the Realms of the Unreal, and the little girls had penises, and there were some strange things about it. Anyway, so I was trying to write about this for a while. And I thought, I think John Ashbery has a book about it as well. And I was like, okay, what am I going to add to that? Anyway, this is, I'll just ruin the plot and say that this is a letter from one of the girls in his work that goes to find him, like looks to find him. And he worked as a janitor in a Catholic hospital. So the title is Undelivered Letter Addressed to the Janitorial Staff at the Alexian Brothers Catholic Hospital, Chicago. Attention, Captain Henry Darger. This is Pamela. I am small. Mr. Darger, I write you of the massacres. We need you. Glendalenians chain us to the cedars. We are the last devotees at Jenny Ritchie. We are the child slave rebellion. Blengigomenians abandon us. flying off, horns piercing the sun like winged rhinos. The ink of wickedness bleeds down the firmament shell. Mr. Darger, we can no longer dance on God's jeweled dance floor, satchels spilling with roses and ridges and rivers in the all-day dusk. The crystal landscape freezes our tiny fingers. The lunatics tie us to birches, sacrificing us before the sacred yurts. We lower our pants before God. My sisters give birth to my sisters. The cairn is regained. Mr. Darger, I set out for you. I outran their arrows, swam in moonlit lakes, camped on haunted moors, limped toward you, mapless, hand on heart. I entered the real for you. Walked through forests till sidewalks began. Clambered toward you over suburb fences. A man said he loved me. I was blindfolded, tied to tables. Mr. Darger, protector of children, I think you have been dreaming of me, where you wash dishes and roll bandages for God, waiting, alone, but with a different face, not one I've seen. I am here, on the sidewalk. Look out of the window. Small context for this one as well. My mom saw the Beatles in 1964 at the Ed Sullivan Show. And I've written so many poems about my dad, I was like, I gotta write a poem about this wonderful thing. And what she said was, she heard nothing. Like, everyone screamed. And the scream was like a fog that you couldn't see through or hear through. It was like this thing. Anyway, this is called Scream. My mother saw the Beatles at the Ed Sullivan Show in 64. She was 16. George was her fave. The way he bobbed his head, the Fab Four had just hit it big. Hungry Boys, riffs, tight. Well, shake it up, baby, now they began, but nothing could be heard over the screams of delirious girls in bobs and polyester polka dots and thick eyeglasses, my mother among them. And in that scream she sat, the scream a wall against the song, with a door through which the feral animal of America passed, or a knocking at that door by a gloved and urgent hand, a sibyl armed with the new maps, one long finger signaling high over West 53rd in the shadow of a bird 100 miles across, migrating toward the southern darkness. 46 years later, my mother and I stumble off a night bus north of Delhi onto a dusty parking lot as lightning bolts split the sky, white veins of a god over the Himalayas, thunder roaring close by. She, clear-eyed, does not flinch or say a word. Kevin. This is a dog poem, but it's not about my dog. Our dog Kevin is deliriously happy, but so dumb that he seems a threat to the joy of others. He lies on his back, pissing into the air like a fountain. If we say the word walk, he shits himself. Often he escapes the rickety gate and is lost, so we circle the neighborhood. Kevin! Kevin! When we return, him on a leash with his cross-eyed grin, my grandma, wrapped in shawls by the fridge, nods sagely. She likes to tell us about UFOs she has seen. She knows which movie stars are aliens. Tonight she pokes me with her cane till I look into her washed-out eyes. She groans, "Where this street meets the other, Kevin knows things you will never know." Gas station ballad. Beef jerky sweats in sunlight. Flies strut the brown meat like studs at a nude beach. I reach for a chocolate bar. "Resist not evil," says the mounted deer's head. "I said it," says the teenage girl at the till in octopus earrings, name tag filthy. "Fifi," I say, "I just stared at my own face in your bathroom mirror and thought, if I died today, I would be happy." "The hairs on your scrotum are numbered," she smiles broadly, front tooth missing. A semi roars past. "I adore these deer heads," I say, "that same part of me that would adore stuffed humans." That same part of me, says Fifi, is so lonesome and unbearably happy that tonight I think I will drive off the side of the road into a cactus and die laughing. I like how you smell of petrol and coal and old jujubes. I'm glad I met you here, she says, at the base camp of love, nail bright, rooted deep and perfected in the desert. High overhead, a vulture circles. This is the last one I'm going to read. It's called The Opposite of Deception. Seeing your girlfriend walk gives me pleasure. I seem to know what she is thinking. Perhaps I will take a walk with your girlfriend. We could play. I might piggyback her. Your girlfriend saves me from the mouth of the wolf. I owe her everything. We are together. Your girlfriend dies very suspiciously. I lose my marbles. I recover and am myself at last. By accident, you and I get stranded on an island. We hate each other, of course. Neither of us can forget your girlfriend. But in the grueling construction of our Parthenon, we fall in love. We cope ably. We dance and sing on the day of your girlfriend's death. In firelight, your eyes reveal a cruel, imperturbable longing. I know I have to kill you, but how? Thank you.
So I encourage you to buy both Johnny and Randy's books, which are available at the back. I believe both would also be happy to answer questions if anyone has any. About hockey or dead dogs or anything in between. I guess I have a question for Randy. I found that in writing long poems or long series of poems about one thing, you sort of hope that the lyric and the narrative, the problems of each will cancel each other out, and you'll have the facility of storytelling that fiction gives and the sort of in-betweenness that poetry gives. And I just wonder, in writing the book, at what point it became not just about something, but at what point it really became yours, at what point it became a manuscript of poems as opposed to just a sort of collection of long anecdotes that you had sought for 10 years.